Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Jorge Cantu. What is up, fellas? How we doing?
What is going on, Nick? What's going on, Jorge? Always a pleasure to have Jorge on the show. I can feel things are going to get a little spicy on this one. And we're all bracing, at least me and Nick are, for some big-time snow coming.
Heck yeah. Once again, excited to be back here at the Outlet. And I'm just feeling in that kind of trade deadline mood as we get closer to the February 7th date. So let's get the trade talk going.
Yeah, exactly. Like Jorge said, we're going to be talking trade today. A couple of NBA headlines that just popped up recently, too. As always, check out the show, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, YouTube. Also, check out Heater's Gonna Heat with Jorge Cantu and Phylexis Hoops with Corey Waldron. But moving on to some of the top NBA headlines, we just got breaking news. Anthony Davis, sprained finger, going to be out 1 to 2 weeks. Guys, how is this going to impact the Pelicans? Are they even going to have a shot at making the playoffs anymore?
So I had very high hopes for the Pelicans before the season started. The thing is, we've seen Anthony Davis in this exact same situation for a couple of years already, where it seems like he has enough talent around him to take a good playoff spot and be in a favorable position in the first round. Davis is obviously one of the league's top players. I don't think anybody can argue against that. He might be top five or top six unanimously. And this year, starting this one, it seemed like he had more than enough help to easily make the playoffs. You can say injuries have derailed the team. Yes, that's right. Nikola Mirotic has missed a bunch of games. Julius Randle has missed a couple of games here and there. Even he has made, like Davis, he has missed a couple of games too. And, well, Jrue Holiday is having a career year. Davis is beasting. But things, for whatever reason, are not working as planned. That's mainly because their defense is letting down, but their offense is just crazy. So Davis is going to be absent for 1 or 2 weeks, and we've seen them struggle even with him. So I don't want to see what happens when they don't have the brow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at their schedule to end January, and it starts off with Memphis and Detroit, which isn't overly hard without Davis. I mean, they're still tough games. But then they play to end the month the Thunder, the Spurs, the Rockets, and the Nuggets.
Oh.
And all of those games have playoff implications. They're all teams ahead of the New Orleans Pelicans. This is bad. This could be something that really puts them farther out of the playoff race. Obviously, Anthony Davis, you mentioned, Jorge, is crucial. He's a top five player in this league. And then given night, he's a top three. And I mean, depending on where you stand, he could even be the best player in the league, depending on how you see him. And obviously, losing him with all the health injuries they've had already this year doesn't help. I don't know. It feels like this could be just the start of what may be the eventual leaving of Anthony Davis. This could be the start of it, because if this next week and a half to 2 weeks goes really bad without Davis, the West is just so tight. They can fall out of the playoff picture that quickly.
Yeah, four games back of the eighth seed right now, 21-25. You figure if they get eight games under 500, it's going to be extremely tough for them to push for the playoffs unless they get busy at the trade deadline and add some type of piece and kind of get desperate. Like Corey said, if they lose all these games and they don't have a shot at the playoffs, I don't think it sends the right message to Anthony Davis. Obviously, he's been very positive about staying, but he is a very good player, and he's going to want to win in this league.
I think that it's possible that, say, the Pelicans lose the next five or six games, or six out of seven, five out of six, whatever. They go on a very bad streak. And then their general manager, I'm pretty sure it's Del Demps,
yep,
he says, you know what? We're 10 games, 8 games, whatever, below 500. We're not going to get any better. And they pull the trigger on an AD trade. How likely do you think that is? Because I do think there's a chance, like Corey said, that things go super bad and they have another injury. Things go the worst case scenario and they just hit the rebuild button.
I personally don't feel like that's likely this year. I just feel like you're going to at least keep Davis through this season, try and probably rework stuff in this offseason, and then give him, next year to really try and make a push. Then, if they're in this kind of predicament and this kind of spot come next season, then I think a trade is definitely on the table. I don't think they're going to look to move him this season, personally.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities, you know, if they were to go 10 games under 580, ask for a trade. But I think it's more likely if they move him that it would actually be in the offseason. I think if they had a really bad year, it's just a little tough in terms of the timeline. It's already, you know, January 19th, like Jorge mentioned earlier, February 7th is the trade deadline. So they'd have to get busy very quickly. And for a trade like that, it would take a little bit more time.
That's a fair point. But I still have the Lakers as a dark horse in the – well, not a dark horse after everybody has reported that they have interest, but they can make a move at any time because they have so much cap space at their disposal that they can make a quick move, just throw in a couple of young players, a couple of picks, and they can make any move they want. So that's the – well, the biggest danger. But I see where you come from, that it's more likely he gets – traded in the offseason or things get worked out there. So, well, we'll see what happens. Well, I hope things don't go too bad for the Pelicans.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a big, you know, situation that we're going to follow over the next couple of weeks, and it could really determine his future in New Orleans. A couple quick notes, guys. We can just mention it, you know, and you don't have to get too deep on this. DeMarcus Cousins played his first game last night with the Warriors. What were your thoughts on that? I know, Corey, you watched the game.
I mean, I know that right from the get-go, you know, he had that Durant gave him a little – pass off a cutting route. He slammed it home. Looked really explosive on it, too. Plenty of fouls for DeMarcus Cousins.
Fouled out.
wanted to make up for a missed time in just 15 minutes. He fouled out. But he also had 14 points in those 15 minutes. You know, three threes, which I think was what stood out the most, is the fact that they really are going to have five guys who can space the floor out there at all times, and one of them is now DeMarcus Cousins. I thought he looked decent. You know, obviously there's going to take some time to get everybody fully functioning, everybody realizing, you know, where they fit on the court now with Cousins entering the fold. But I liked what I saw, and it almost felt, once again, kind of like I did before the year, that there is no way someone's beating this team in seven games. That's kind of how this felt.
Yeah. Looking at the box score, as Corey mentioned, he had 14 points, six boards, three assists, one steal and one block. Like, he filled the stat sheet all around. So, and I don't think anybody's beating. I don't think anybody is beating this team either. Like, it just seems too hard. What are you going to do against five All-Stars?
Yeah, and the thing is, one injury, no big deal for them because they have so much talent on this team. And it's not like they don't have solid bench pieces. Obviously, they haven't performed great this year. But in the playoffs, you know they're going to step up. Unless somebody in the East or a team like Houston or whoever's at the top of the West or like Denver makes a really big trade to add another All-Star, it's going to be extremely tough to beat this team in a seven-game series. On a smaller note, we did have a little bit more news. Kenneth Faried was bought out by the Brooklyn Nets, and it looks like he's going to sign with the Houston Rockets. What do you guys think on this front? Is he going to help Houston?
I mean, he doesn't quite fit the Mike D'Antoni modern big man role in the sense that he cannot really shoot threes consistently. Oh, well, Nick, you might be able to correct me.
He shot a couple threes this year, but like you said, Jorge, not consistently. I mean, personally, from my perspective, watching the Nets, he really hasn't gotten a lot of minutes. His best, you know, spot right now in the NBA, a small ball five. I'm sure James Harden's going to do a good job throwing him oops and whatnot. But defensively, he's not going to really bring a ton. But rebounding-wise, he should help. But also, this Houston team is super desperate, just losing Clint Capela for a couple weeks.
I mean, Faried is definitely an upgrade over whoever is starting at center. I really don't.
Nene's been playing center. They've been going without center sometimes. Marquise Chris has been getting minutes, so it's been pretty ugly at Houston at the center spot. Jared Allen just had his first 2020 game against them this week. So
yeah, so that Kenneth Faried, definitely a clear upgrade. And as you mentioned, he's at best beastly small ball five because of how aggressive and how reckless he is at attacking the rim and fighting for rebounds. He wasn't called an animal at one point. He made the Olympic team. So I'm pretty sure he still has a couple of good games in him. Just didn't quite find the opportunity with Brooklyn, and he could help most teams. I'm pretty sure about that. So Houston gets a nice addition in the meantime while Clint Capela is out.
Yeah, I mean, reacting to the trade just last night through tweeting, I think it makes sense for the Rockets. Obviously, they need bodies at this point. They need bodies who can kind of get up and down the floor. Kenneth Faried has been that guy in the past. I know I've spoken this a couple of times. I've saw one game of Kenneth Faried this year, and it was against the Milwaukee Bucks. He had a double-double in the second half. He looked decent. You know, I don't know. what his fit will be with the Rockets long term. But I think for what they're lacking now and for how well James Harden is playing, any and all talent that can maybe assist him in helping them win. I mean, they just lost the other night when he scored 58. So they were going to do everything they can just to get, yeah, shout out to the Nets. So he get some sort of help to help push, you know, this team farther up into the Western Conference. I think Kemp Free is a solid move for now, but it feels like there's more coming.
Yeah, and it feels like, honestly, that Harden's going to get a lot out of him. He just gives him another person to run that pick and roll with, somebody who can attack the rim. And like Jorge said, you know, when he's playing hard, he's still a good player. The problem is he going to consistently play hard? If he's not getting the ball, is he going to play defense? I think that's a question mark. But like you said, Corey, Houston kind of needs anything they can get at the moment. But moving on from the headlines, moving on to the OTG trade deadline, like we've been talking about the last couple shows, be sure to check them out. We're going to start with day 11, and this is via Jack Manuel. New Orleans Pelicans receive Kent Bazemore. Atlanta receives Solomon Hill, Cheick Diallo, and a 2019 first-round pick, lottery protected.
I like the lottery protection. It gives the Pelicans some, you know, some
insurance.
Yeah, it's an insurance policy because it's not a given that they'll make the playoffs, and even less now with Anthony Davis out for the you know, foreseeable future. But Bazemore would be a nice addition. I'm pretty sure he's still injured right now, right?
Yeah, it's also probably something to do with Atlanta necessarily not rushing him back and wanting to play the young guys too.
Yeah, it seems like a good move for both sides. Obviously, the incentive for Atlanta is the pick, and it's, you know, at this point with Davis out, there's no saying if it will convey or not. But still, Diallo is a nice big man, because I've heard they're also trying to ship Dwayne Dedman out. He's another veteran that can fit well in other teams, say the Warriors or even the Rockets, who need some help at center. So I like the trade. It's good.
I think it's a solid trade. I mean, obviously for the Pelicans, this was made prior to Anthony Davis getting hurt. But a kind of versatile wing like Kent Bazemore can do a little bit of everything. I think that's definitely an upgrade over Solomon Hill, who has been really a dud for the Pelicans over his stretch there. Cheick Diallo, you know, still a very young guy, doesn't necessarily have a role in the NBA long term. Atlanta gets another asset in the pick, and the Pelicans get another win now player. I think it's a pretty fair trade.
Yeah, I like the trade too. And obviously the Anthony Davis news kind of impacts it, but Bazemore could give them the boost. They need help on the wing. They need some depth out there. And from the Hawks' perspective, you take on the bad contract of Solomon Hill, who has another year, another era on the trade machine. And Diallo's a young piece where he hasn't really proven much. He's had a couple big summer league games. Maybe they can get more out of him, and then they get the first-round pick, which is exactly what rebuilding teams are trying to do. So I think solid trade from Jack. Moving on to day 11.1, we got the Atlanta Hawks again. Receive Lanson Galway, Glenn Robinson III, in exchange to the Pistons for Jeremy Lin.
I don't know about that one. Like, do the Pistons, are they trying to play Jeremy Lin and Reggie Jackson together? Because I get that Lin, he doesn't really have anything to do in Atlanta at this point, but I think the Hawks can do slightly better for him. And well, then there's Langston Galloway and what was Glenn Robinson?
Yeah, Glenn Robinson III.
Yeah, I think Robinson might be the better piece, being he's a young guy, and he was in the dunk contest. I think he actually won it a couple of seasons ago. So there's still potential there. That's another, you know, another area where the Hawks would always be willing to get all the young guys they can, because what they're doing right now is working. But I think the Hawks might be able to do slightly better. And I don't really think the Pistons get, you know, that much better with the trade.
So Glenn Robinson III, obviously, he's been a bust for them. Galloway had some nice moments with the Knicks, and he just never really flourished in Detroit. I think it makes sense because Reggie Jackson has just been terrible. I mean, quite frankly, he can't shoot. You know, he just doesn't look as explosive as the same kind of player. Ish Smith is kind of their best point guard because he's a very good playmaker. And I think Jeremy Lin is kind of like in between what they hoped Reggie Jackson would be and an upgrade from Ish Smith, at least offensively. So I think this is a fair trade to a degree for Detroit. For Atlanta, I mean, you're taking a risk on a young guy and you're getting another asset, but I don't I don't know how much Atlanta would want to, but again, you know, you're trying to move off guys like Lynn, Dedmon, and Bazemore because, you know, why have these vets on your roster if you can get some assets in return?
Yeah, I think from the Detroit side, it's a great trade. You know, they're really not giving up much. They're getting Jeremy Lin, who could be a fill-in starter. Reggie Jackson is out with injury, or if he's just not playing well, and you can use him as that combo guard, gives him a little bit of three-point shooting too. From the Atlanta side, it doesn't really seem that enticing. You know, you're getting Langston Galloway. He has another year in his contract. Same thing with Glenn Robinson III. His second year of his contract might be partially guaranteed, but still, I think they at least want a second-round pick in this deal because it just doesn't make much sense for Atlanta to pull a trigger.
Right, I think they can do better. Like, yeah, there might be better offers out there for them. But if they get desperate and there's no other the teams calling at the trade deadline, the Hawks need to do it because there's no point in keeping these guys, these veterans that can play.
Honestly, if you're asking me, if I was the Hawks in this situation, I'd probably just buy out Lin instead of taking that trade because why do I want to have that extra salary on my books when I can use that to potentially take on a bad contract for another pick?
Well, that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. Moving on from that one, 11.2, our guy Jeremy Fried. Cleveland receives Justin Jackson, Scal Laszlo, and Sacramento receives Rodney Hood and David Nwaba.
I like that one because Hood and Nwaba are guys that can kind of contribute right now, you know, on a more present day timeline than Jackson and Laszlo. But I don't think people have noticed how good. Because Jackson has done a couple of things that have, you know, flown under the radar. And I think Zach Lowe pointed it out in his last 10 Things article last Friday. And, you know, looking, I obviously don't watch Kings games regularly, but looking at the buzz he's been creating online, Jackson can, he can do some things. It's obviously going to take a little bit of time. And, well, Laszlo is more of a long-term project. And given the Cavs are just in the dumpster right now and the Kings are actually looking to make a push, it seems like a fair trade to me.
Yeah, I'm okay with this move. I actually am a big fan. I think I commented on this on Twitter because I actually enjoyed it. I mean, from the Kings' perspective, I think Rodney Hood gives them another offensive weapon, a decent defender. David Nwaba, I'm a huge fan of, and I actually said his name really freaking well. but I enjoy the energy he plays with, a really good defender. Was getting better offensively. I'm not sure his offensive numbers this year. I actually haven't looked at them. I don't watch much Cavalier games, guys, believe it or not. And for good reason. Last night I watched some of that game. They were losing like 80 to like 50. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly why I don't watch Cavaliers basketball.
Damn.
But David Nwaba, I think, is a solid piece. And then for the Cavs, you know, Justin Jackson is a nice young wing. Obviously, they're still trying to figure out who's going to be there long term. They get a couple more young guys to throw into the mix and maybe in bigger roles in Cleveland, they find out that, you know, Jackson or figures out their long-term solutions.
Yeah, I think it works out for both sides. You know, Sacramento gets a little better now. The Cavs get a couple young pieces they can kind of take flyers on and see how it works out. Solid trade in my eyes. Moving on to day 12, Nick is back at it again. This is an interesting one and kind of with the latest Dennis Smith Jr. news. Orlando receives Wesley Matthews and Dennis Smith Jr. Dallas receives Nikola Vucevic and Terrence Ross.
Oh, that's a really good trade. I mean, I do think the Magic can do slightly better for Vucevic because he's been like, you know, he's just been nuts this season. And I'm pretty sure he'll be an upgrade over DeAndre Jordan. I mean, there's no replacing the rebounding that Jordan brings, but I just feel like he's been a little bit lazy this year. But Vucevic has been doing really good on the boards himself. He's been a monster. Those who play DFS know that I've been having him there for a couple of days, and he's been rewarding us. So he took that major leap, and then the Magic get to fill that void that they have at point guard because I still don't know how they've gone over one half of the season with DJ Augustine starting most of their games at point guard. So Dennis Smith, he gets a new situation because it seems like it's time for the Luka show in Dallas. And then the Mavericks get, they get Vucevic, who is a really, really nice offensive weapon, and I'm pretty sure he'll complement pretty well with Luka. And then the Magic will also be getting Wesley Matthews, who I think at this point is kind of an underrated player too. He can make threes. he can play D. He wasn't the same after his Achilles injury, but still, he's a very, you know, good player. He can score, and he can help the Magic do some damage. And well, losing Terrence Ross obviously hurts, but you know, the trade for Dennis Smith, I think that's the main, you know, the main asset that they're receiving. So I don't think they mind giving up Vucevic and Ross in this one. Good trade for both sides.
Yeah, Orlando does not care who they're giving up in this deal if they're getting a young, promising asset like Dennis Smith Jr. They don't care about losing Vucevic. They don't care about losing Terrence Ross, because then you have a young core. Whether or not Steve Clifford plays the young core is a different question. But you have Dennis Smith Jr., Jonathan Isaac, Mo Bamba. I'm probably forgetting somebody.
Aaron Gordon's still pretty young.
Aaron Gordon, too. Oh, yeah, that's Aaron the Gordon. Name I probably should have named first. but they have, obviously, a decent young core if they were to pull off a trade like this for Dennis Smith Jr. And then Wesley Matthews, just a contract filler. You got to make everything work. Obviously, Dallas has been trying to move him for the last couple of years. And you don't need to attach a pick, probably, because if you're getting Dennis Smith Jr., that's, you know, your draft pick. And then for Dallas's perspective, Vucevic and DeAndre Jordan on the same floor or on the same team, I obviously that's not a long-term fix. And they've said that DeAndre Jordan, they probably won't give a multi-year extension to this upcoming offseason. But Vucevic would definitely make them more dynamic from the center position. Obviously, he can shoot more. He's a very good rebounder. He would just give a different offensive dynamic to that offense. Luka Doncic would probably love to have, you know, a big-time big man who can score. Obviously, DeAndre Jordan's very good at what he does, rim running and rim protecting and rebounding. But, you know, his offensive game is limited to oops and, you know, put-back dunks and everything around the rim. Vucevic can expand that, help him stretch the floor. And then Terrence Ross, I think I've been probably one of the biggest Terrence Ross stains this season. I think he's been phenomenal for the Magic, having a career year, looks very athletic. He's back to being that 3-and-D guy who we once saw in Toronto when they had that nice run. He was the slam dunk champion. I think he's kind of back to that. He, for whatever reason, he kind of lost his way a little bit. So I think Dallas gets two very win-now players, and then Orlando gets a big-time point guard to build around for the future. I really like this trade.
Yeah, I think we'll need to change the name of the Mavericks to the Euro Mavericks if this trade goes through, because they have a bunch of European players who are contributing, and obviously Doncic is a big part of this. So this is really something I want to see happen.
And I think, you know, for Orlando, it pretty much signal they're not going for the playoffs. But like Corey and Jorge mentioned, you'd be getting your, you know, point guard of the future in Dennis Smith Jr. and Vucevic and Terrence Ross. No guarantee they're in the long-term plans anyways, both expiring. So it helps Dallas kind of get the win now. And it gives them flexibility where they're looking to have that open cap space for the summer anyways, because they're going to be one of the top teams in terms of cap space this summer. So I like the trade as well. On to 12.1, Tao back at it. He's got the Atlanta Hawks receiving Wilson Chandler and Markel Fultz, and the Sixers receiving Jeremy Lin and Torian Prince.
Ooh. On paper, it seems like a good trade, but do the Hawks really want to take a flyer on Markel Fultz? Like, Chandler is an expiring contract, and it's just another veteran that is supposed to be there in Philly to help them, you know, fill that void at the forward position. But is Markel Fultz really, you know, that big of a, like, I don't know. It seems this obviously would help the Sixers much more, because Prince has, I believe he was the best player in the Hawks last year. He showed some very, very impressive, you know, massive improvements from what he has seen prior. But I don't really know if the Hawks want to do this.
Okay. I mean, for the Sixers' perspective, I mean, getting Taurean Prince and Jeremy Lin is big time, because Jeremy Lin's a good backup point guard. We've mentioned his playmaking ability. Taurean Prince is also really good, probably underrated how good he is in Atlanta. Obviously, whether or not they want to move on from him, that's something I don't think they should do. I think you can probably use Prince for the future, but if he doesn't really fit into your time schedule, I understand. Philly could use a guy like Taurean Prince. I think Wilson Chandler, the idea of who Wilson Chandler was is exactly what the Sixers needed. But Wilson Chandler just really isn't that. I think he still plays a lot of good hustle basketball. Offensively, though, he's just not the same player. He's had some hip injuries. He's had a lot of injuries. I just think it's taking a toll on him. So he's just not the same type of player. And as we know, I mean, this is probably the first time I've heard Markel Fultz since he got removed from playing because of the shoulder injury. We haven't really heard anything on him, any reports, so I really don't know what's going on with him. But if the Hawks think maybe a Fultz, Trey Young backcourt could be something, then maybe they go after a move like this. I personally feel like there is no trade market for Markelle Fultz at this point in time. That's personally how I feel.
I think it would be a huge risk for the Hawks, but it could pay off. You know, obviously Markelle Fultz, a change of scenery, a team like Atlanta rebuilding, there's not as much pressure. You know, it's if they believe in Fultz, this trade makes sense. If they don't, then obviously they're not going to do it. You know, Jeremy Lin, like we talked about earlier, he's going to get moved on from. They're not going to look to keep him for the whole year. Torian Prince would be an interesting piece. And I think the argument would be maybe, you know, Markelle Fultz has the higher ceiling if he can get back to the game that, you know, was expected when he was drafted. But if not, you know, it would be a steal for the Sixers. So I think it's a safe move for the Sixers. It's a huge risk for the Hawks because, like what you guys mentioned, we really have no idea what's going on with Markelle Fultz.
100% agreed.
So it's, you know, it's all on the Hawks' perspective, how they view Markelle Fultz. Moving on to 12.2, Dalton Pence, you know, one of the busiest trade guys out there right now. And he's got a hot one for us, and this is kind of related to the topic we start the show with. The Lakers receive Anthony Davis. The Pelicans receive Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, 2019, 2021, 2023 first-round picks from the Lakers.
Wow, that's a massive deal. Like just the picks alone make it, like, a very, very interesting deal. You're getting Ball, you're getting Hart, and you're getting Ingram. Plus, what's that, three picks?
Yep, three first-round picks.
And then, well, Caldwell Pope is there to fill the salaries, but, I mean, unless the Pelicans would want to wait and see what the Celtics have to offer, I don't think they're getting any better offers. And that's kind of the point that I was making, that the Lakers just have so many assets. You know, the combination of picks and young players, that they can make an offer for anybody in the league. They already have the best player in the league. Or, so, you know, he's still considered widely as the best player in the league in LeBron James. So they can trade for anyone. And I think that this is as good as they want to trade. And if they throw in this package, I don't think the Pelicans have any interest in waiting for, you know, to see what the Celtics offer. Because that's three picks. Three young, interesting guys. Obviously, Ball still, you know, I have mixed emotions towards him, but still, you have two other guys, and then Caldwell Pope is gone after this year. So, and Davis has what, another year left in his contract after this?
Yeah, he has another year, and I believe then it's a player option, the following season. And obviously, if they get him, they'll be able to extend him, you know, in house, which will be a little easier too.
I like this one. I like it for both sides. Maybe the Lakers are giving up a little bit too much, but if that's what it takes to pair LeBron with Anthony Davis, I think they should take it.
I'm so on the fence for this one. Because obviously, if you can get Anthony Davis, you get Anthony Davis. I mean, I think that goes without saying. If you can bring in a once-in-a-lifetime generational player to pair with LeBron James – when you still probably have more cap room to go after another superstar after that, like, yeah, it makes 110% sense to make that deal. With that said, I would have a really tough time getting rid of all of my young assets in Lonzo, Ingram, and Hart. Now, granted, you're keeping Kuzma, you're keeping Zubac in this deal as well. I'd actually probably try and package Zubac in and maybe keep Hart or just some scenario. I don't want to – for me, what really sticks out is, like, I wouldn't want to give up Ball, Ingram, and Hart to win now. And maybe that's wrong, but I still don't think necessarily Davis and LeBron, depending on the third star they would bring in, is good enough to compete with the Warriors team as constructed, especially if, you know, depends on who stays and who goes. We know the contract situation is coming up for them and Durant's future and everything else, but – I just feel like that's a lot to give up, and you're really – it just feels like you're hurting your future. Like, LeBron went there because of all the young talent and everything else, and I get it. Anthony Davis wasn't available. Maybe he wasn't in the forefront of who they wanted to target. But if you're losing all these young assets, you know, Rondo then becomes a pivotal member of this team. You're relying on LeBron, who's already missed the most games of his career this season, to stay healthy over the duration of these next couple of years because you're getting rid of the youth. I just see a lot of downsides to a trade like this. For the Pelicans' perspective, you take it all day if you have to get rid of Davis, because you're getting a lot of young pieces together that you can start to build around, and you still have Jrue Holiday under contract. You still have Julius Randle. It's almost like a Lakers 2.0, but in New Orleans. But I think the Lakers have to make the deal, but I'd be really hesitant and really cautious.
I don't think I would be that cautious if I'm Lakers. Yeah, it's like a huge risk. You're trading on the first round picks. You're trading young pieces, but like a lot of them haven't been as promising as you anticipated when obviously this stretch without LeBron. And then also you're trading for Anthony Davis, who is 25 years old. It's pretty much guaranteeing your franchise is going to be relevant for the next 7 years. You'll have LeBron. You'll have all the cap space this summer. Now you have the potential to pair him with, you know, AD, LeBron, KD, or Kawhi, like, you know, one of those three combinations right there. And then also, I think for this season, they'd open up a lot of roster space where they'd be very busy in the buyout market. You know, maybe this season exactly, they wouldn't be able to compete with the Warriors, but Anthony Davis and LeBron, probably two players in recent memory who've done the best other than Kyrie Irving against the Warriors. So having those two guys automatically gives you a shot. I think you pull the trigger because you still get to keep Kuzma, and like the other guys haven't been super impressive, and now you can kind of get them at their value before, because there's no guarantee Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Josh Hart are going to become great players. You know, it's like, all right, it's still a risk taking on the young guys. I think the finishing and the sweetener for the Pelicans would be the three first-round picks, where there's really no way for the Pelicans to say no in the situation in my eyes.
Like, do we understand how crazy it is having Anthony Davis in a Los Angeles market alongside
LeBron?
Yeah, exactly, alongside the guy who's still regarded as the best player in the league. I don't think we really understand that. And even I agree with Nick. Even when you're giving all these young guys, they have not. It seems like they have disappointed a ton thus far. Because Ball, I'm still looking for his shot. He has a non-existent shot.
He's still looking for a shot.
He's still looking for it too. And then Hard, I mean, it's also the arrival of LeBron. But this year he's taking a step down. And then Ingram, we expected him to be the big guy while LeBron was out, and he did have a very nice game this week. But other than that, he's been, you know, a little bit. And I don't think them alongside LeBron gives them the best chance to play Ball, because he's handicapped. Obviously, he's a top playmaker, and LeBron is too. And then Ingram, he's not benefiting from playing alongside a Ball dominant forward either. So maybe if they get a change of scenery, the Pelicans can untap their potential. So I really like this trade and would make it from both sides, even when it might be a little bit risky from the Lakers side with all the picks. But as Nick mentioned, they're pretty much set for the next 6-7 years when they get Davis to re-sign.
Yeah. The only thing I want to say is I'm not overly worried about Lonzo and Hart necessarily. I mean, these guys are still so young. And I mean, Ingram to me is the guy who's kind of questionable, because everyone just has these high expectations of him. And people continue to have these high expectations. I just don't necessarily see it on the floor. But I don't know. I mean, you have to do it, obviously. If you're the Pelicans, you're getting this much back. You have to do it. You're not going to get a better deal. And for the Lakers, you're getting Anthony Davis, as you guys have mentioned, which is, you know, he's 25. He's going to be the face of the league possibly in, you know, the next 3 years. So I understand you got to do it. I don't know. For me, it's just, I don't know. I guess I value youth for once. I don't know. I'm in a weird place on this.
Brandon Ingram is actually just as young as Lonzo Ball. So, I mean, it also depends on how you view the three guys. Do you think any of these guys are going to become all-star players? And even if you think two or three of them are going to become all-star players, I don't think any of them are going to become superstar players. And I think, you know, in a vacuum, you would trade two all-stars for one true superstar.
And you're also getting the three first-round picks, which is insane. So the Pelicans also get a chance to find some value in the draft and in the future. So I think both sides have a pretty fair, you know, that they get a pretty fair return for what they're giving up.
And I think the only thing that maybe holds up New Orleans is there's been talk about the franchise and how it would just kill the franchise to lose Anthony Davis. So that's the only reason where maybe the Pelicans don't pull the trigger. I mean, it's still very exciting for a fan base to get three young, you know, players like this who've had some success in the league. But still, that would be the only thing that would hold me back from the Pelicans' size. Like, are we going to lose our fan base? This is a business. Like, we need to stay on top of it. That'd be the only, like, concern. But the Lakers, like, I get losing all the young pieces, but I also think Anthony Davis, like you said, Corey, it could be the guy who's the next face of the NBA. Moving on from there, any final thoughts?
I do have one. That would be nuts. That's all I'm going to say before we move on. That would be nuts.
I agree. It would be nuts. I don't see it happening this season, but like we said, I think it's more likely in the offseason. But moving on to day 13, which is today, we'll have more trades probably dropping later in the day. The Charlotte Hornets receive Wesley Matthews, Dennis Smith Jr. Dallas receives Jeremy Lamb, Frank Kaminsky, Marvin Williams, and OKC's second round pick.
Oh, no, that's an awful trade. I'm not doing that if I'm the Mavericks. I excuse me, whomever created this trade, but it just sounds like the Mavericks are giving up Dennis Smith Jr., who can, you know, he should get back a first round pick, and then they're getting Frank Kaminsky and Marvin Williams, and those guys are not, you know, somebody who will contribute right away as for what they're trying to do, but I don't like this one.
I mean, I don't know if necessarily the assets match up, but I disagree with those guys not being able to help out the Mavericks right away. I think Marvin Williams is a very capable stretch four. I think Jeremy Lamb has been the best version of himself the last couple of years as a two guard. I think they get better offensively. I think they get a couple more. They get a little bit better in depth. You know, Wesley Matthews is just a shell of himself. And then, you know, the Hornets get Dennis Smith Jr. And, yeah, granted, it's probably not the right value for Dennis Smith Jr. But the Mavericks are also in a really bad position right now because they said they wanted to trade Dennis Smith Jr. Then they said, let's try and fix it and go forward. And then they had practice, and Dennis Smith Jr. basically said, you know, nah, you know, F yourself. I don't want to be here. You guys, what, you think you can just tell me you're going to trade me and then say, let's move forward? Like, no, I can see, you know, what you think of me, where – how you guys feel about me. So, you know, that situation now, it's not like the Mavericks have they still have leverage, obviously. But anytime a player is now sitting out and not going to practice, it makes the question, you know, what is the actual value for Dennis Smith Jr. now? And then for the Hornets, you know, you get a nice young piece in Dennis Smith Jr. I feel like if they make a deal like this, they're afraid they're going to lose Kemba. This, to me, strikes me as Kemba Walker might leave this offseason. Let's get another franchise guy possibly. You know, to run the franchise after he possibly leaves. So I think it's decent. I think this trade makes more sense after knowing Dennis Smith Jr. refused to go to practice yesterday. But you're probably right, Jorge. It's probably not the right value for Dennis Smith Jr.
But wait, hold on there. The apparent reason why the Mavericks are trying to get Dennis Smith Jr. out of there is because he's not comfortable.
Not anymore. They want to keep
position.
Him.
Supposedly they want to keep him, but with Luka Doncic running pretty much the point guard position, it was apparent that Dennis Smith Jr. was uncomfortable not playing point guard after just being drafted a year earlier. But if the Hornets are planning to keep Kemba, then that defeats the whole purpose, because Dennis Smith Jr. would be then stuck playing the two or playing alongside a ball dominant point guard, maybe more than Doncic. So is there any incentive for Smith to get to Charlotte? That's just another point I find against the trade.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting on that front is what's his role in Charlotte. But I think a great coach could find a role for any player. You know, James Regal's done a good job. I'm not sure he's a great coach yet. But, you know, I think they could find his fit in Charlotte. And like Corey said, it could be kind of Kemba insurance, because I don't even think you could play both guys together. They're both around, you know, a shorter point guard in the NBA. It's not like one of them can really play two guard. The one thing I really don't like from the Dallas side, too, is they probably have no interest in taking on a Marvin Williams contract. Like, exactly. He's a solid player, but like I said earlier in the show, they want to maintain their cap space. They're going to be one of the top cap space teams this summer. So taking on Marvin Williams, who's a solid player, but he's not going to really move the needle. I think in this trade were to happen, it would probably have to not include Marvin Williams and maybe another second round pick, or possibly, you know, a heavily protected first round pick. But, you know, Charlotte's not really in a situation to trade the first round pick because there's a good chance they're not going to make the playoffs.
Maybe we could relocate this move to the bad trade marathon or something.
God, thanks.
That's fired. No, I'm kidding. Who was it who wrote this one?
Nick wrote the trade. So I'll be sure to let him know.
Nick, if you're listening, it's not personal. I just feel like the trade is terrible.
I think to defend Nick a little bit, moving a player in Dennis Smith's situation, like Corey mentioned earlier, is probably one of the most difficult things because his trade value is very hard to speculate on because of the whole situation. Yeah, the Mavs are saying they're open to keeping him now, but that's probably just an attempt to maintain more leverage, which they've lost most of at this point. And Dennis Smith Jr. hasn't been the most impressive, you know, sophomore player in the NBA. He's really struggled. His jump shot is inconsistent. There's been questions about his decision-making. You know, obviously he's uber athletic. He's still a little undersized though. So there's plenty of question marks that come with him. I think they'd be better off probably trading to a team that's a little bit worse, that just wants to take on the young player strictly.
What about Phoenix that also has a big boy to point guard?
They mentioned being a team that was interested.
Yeah, I didn't read the headline then, but yeah, I mean, I think maybe another team that needs some help at the guard spot. I don't know, maybe even we mentioned the Pistons that happened, you know, with Reggie being terrible. I don't know how the salaries or things could work, but I think it would be much better. And I say once again, especially if the Hornets plan on keeping Kemba, which I'm pretty sure it's their intentions right now, then they, you know, like Dennis Smith would be a better fit in a place that you know, the guards are kind of like their weaker spots. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but he's still undersized, so he needs the right players around him for the deal to work out.
Corey, what are some spots you like Dennis Smith to go to?
I mean, I think Orlando makes a lot of sense. I think Phoenix would make a lot of sense. Both those teams also have enough, like, win-now assets, I think, that you can package in that could interest Dallas.
Every team has good point guards. Like, most every team in the league has good point guards.
I saw some Pacer Twitter heads kind of, like, looking at deals. Like, the Pacers would be somewhat interesting, too, if they wanted to package something to get Dennis Smith Jr., because they obviously have a lot of point guard questions in the future. But again, I don't know what a deal like that would look like. I don't think they have enough of win now or pieces that would interest Dallas.
If you think if they threw Collison in a heavily protected first round pick?
I still think you'd have to throw in like an Austin Holiday probably. And right now, Pacers Nation is like, we're all on board with Austin Holiday. Like, he's the truth.
Aaron Holiday, right?
Aaron Holiday, my Austin Holiday. That's the fourth brother. He's coming up next year. Aaron Holiday. He's been fantastic. I mean, he plays like 5 minutes a game, and he still gets like 6 points, 2 rebounds. Like, he just goes absolutely crazy whenever he gets playing time. So those are like three teams that pop up in my head. I could even see maybe Utah, if they could figure out a way to package like a Jay Crowder or, I don't know, a couple other smaller guys to get Dennis Smith Jr. They could use the point guard help, especially having a nice young guy next to Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert long-term could be pretty fun.
In terms of Phoenix, what do you guys think? Are you thinking something along like just a straight-up Josh Jackson, Dennis Smith Jr. swap?
Josh Jackson has been very, very disappointing. I don't know if it's just that the Suns have no idea how to use him or how to develop him into a better player, but that doesn't seem like the case looking at what they've done with Devin Booker. but with that said, I don't know, maybe TJ Warren? Warren could be a guy that helps Dallas right now. But I don't know how the salaries match up in there. That's my only concern.
Corey knows. TJ Warren, what Corey said, makes around like 10 to 12 mil.
Yeah, he makes between 12 and 14 mil, I believe.
Oh, shoot. So
and
maybe.
He has a long-term contract too, which I really think that Dallas is trying to stay away from long-term contracts unless it's a really good player for this offseason.
Right. The one thing in his favor, though, you know, he is 25 and he is having a career year. But again, I don't think this is the kind of guy, when you already have Harrison Barnes too locked up, do you want to lock up another type of wing long term?
Good point. Yeah. I agree, Corey.
All right, guys, that pretty much wraps up the deadline. Like we mentioned, check out otgbasketball.com for all the latest mock trades we got going out there. Corey, I'm going to pass it to you for the game we got rolling today.
So it's another stat line game.
Hey,
but this one is predicated around only guys in trade rumors.
Interesting. Ooh.
So different little element. So you guys already have one little hint of what type of players are on this list. There's seven guys. So it's pretty much a best out of seven. I'm letting you guys go head to head. I'm probably going to sit this one out.
I mean, you already know the stats, so you kind of got to.
Yeah. I'll set it on the record.
Oh, man, it's such a blonde moment. Oh,
I was humiliated last time I came to the show.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, so I need to win this one just for the sake of my, you know, of pride. Pride.
Yes. This is a pride game for you, Jorge. Okay, so here we go.
I hope you had your Wheaties.
So first up, we have a point guard. He is in the, and you get two guesses. The first guess was just a conference guess, and then the next guess I'll go to the division. First guy, I almost said his name. Point guard, Eastern Conference, comes off the bench. He averages 10.4 points per game, 2.4 rebounds per game, 3.6 assists per game, on shooting splits of 47.8 and 34.7.
Jeremy Lin.
Yes.
What? You didn't even give me a chance to think about it.
Damn. Hey, if you know, you know. This is Jeopardy or whatever. Right,
it's called. It's a kill throw game, Jorge.
All right. So, okay. I'll see how this is going. Right. Okay.
Next up, point guard, Western Conference, 12.6 points per game, 2.6 rebounds per game, 3.9 assists per game, 44.3, shooting splits of 44.3, 37.5. Has been a starter majority of the season.
Dennis Smith Jr.
Yes. Okay.
we're even.
Points are that high?
Yeah.
Wow. I was gonna go Dennis Smith Jr., but I was like, wow, I'm surprised.
Yeah, he's actually not shooting bad. I was surprised too. I thought he was playing worse.
You happen to know how many 3-point attempts per game he has, or no?
I can look that up quick. I'm right here on basketball.com. He is shooting 3.7 attempts per game.
Wow.
It's not terrible.
No, that's not terrible. Wow. Okay.
We might be valuing Dennis Smith Jr. more than before then.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Next up, shooting guard, Eastern Conference, starter, averaging 14 points per game, 4 rebounds per game, 2.6 assists per game, on shooting splits of 44.1, 32.7.
Kent Bazemore?
Yes.
Oh, you bit me to it. I was about to say Bazemore, but then I heard the three-pointers, and I was like, wait, does he shoot 32 from three?
Yeah, so he's a consistent three-point shooter.
This one's going to be rock hard.
All right.
I'm a small forward / power forward. I've played in the Western Conference, and I average 13.4 points per game, 5.4 rebounds per game, 0.5 assists per game.
Carmelo Anthony.
Yo.
There's only two players it could be. As soon as he said he played in the Western Conference, it was either Carmelo or Trevor Ariza. So, and I had a feeling it wasn't Ariza because he probably would have said West to East. So, yeah.
Okay.
Humiliated once again that you guessed Carmelo Anthony.
You're in this. You're still in it, Jorge. You just got to win out.
I'm going to come back from the 3-1.
Here we go. This is comeback time for you. Eastern Conference, center, starter. This is so easy. Okay. 20.1 points per game.
Pucevic!
Sorry, Jorge.
Way to go, Jorge.
This isn't fair.
Keeping it alive. Okay.
Yeah, no, Corey, I got it first.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What? No, I got it.
Go to the tape. I have to go to the tape.
We're going to have to go to the tape for that one. We're going to have to see in the future. I don't know. That was close.
Okay. All right. Let's say I'm still in the game for the sake of the
Even still. You're alive. Because that one's – we got to – that's being reviewed back in
it's Syracuse. Oh,
Western Conference shooting guard comes off the bench, averages 10.2 points per game, 2.7 rebounds per game, 1.1 assists per game, on shooting splits of 42.4, 35.4.
Who Wesley Matthews?
Caldwell Pope.
Ooh, there you go, Jorge.
Hey! Yeah.
That was a bad question because he has started the last two games, but majority he's been a bench player.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Caldwell Pope has – I think Matthews has started a bunch of games too, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think they've both kind of like been in and out of starting rotations, I feel. Positive on Matthews. All right, next up. Power forward / center, Eastern Conference, averages 8.7 points per game, 8.5 rebounds per game, 2.0 assists on shooting splits of 46.7 and 40.7.
Is that Dwayne Dedman?
No.
So we have one more guess.
Did you both say Dedman?
Yeah, we did. Okay. You said the conference was the East, correct?
It's a conference of the East, and the division is the Atlantic.
And he's a trade candidate?
I think so. In my eyes, he is. he's been involved in a couple trade deadline marathon deals.
Atlantic division.
Noah Vonleh?
Yes. I feel like he's a good candidate.
Yeah, he is for sure. I think I don't know. I just like the stats. I didn't like think off the top of my head for
really good stats.
Yeah, they are. I'd be interested to see his 3-point attempts as well.
I have him up right here. He's shooting 2.1.
Oh, that's not terrible. Enough to keep you honest.
Yeah.
You
know,
major prop, Nick, because I would have never guessed Vonleh. Like, I was thinking, I don't know, Pistons or Nets thing, but no, never would I have guessed.
The only other person I would have considered in that division was maybe like Mike Muscala, but the rebounds are way too high.
Yeah. He's been solid for the Sixers,
too. Oh, I forgot about the Sixers.
But that's it. Nick wins the Guess the Line trade edition. Jorge, you may have had three right. We're going to have to check the tape on Vucevic. Right. But either way, Nick is 2-0 now against you. This is getting hot and heavy.
I'm going to come back next week. I'm going to learn everybody's stats, and I'm going to humiliate Nick back.
God, Jorge. God. I feel the hate all the way in Connecticut right now.
Nah, man, all good. I always love coming to the show to play these because they're super fun. You know I love the stats, so it's always very, very fun to play these.
I like being on this side of the stats.
We could change that real quick if you want to keep this interesting. Jorge, you want to try to beat Corey real quick? I could come up with three.
Okay. I'm down, Jorge, if you're down.
We could do a best of three?
Yeah, best of three again.
All right, I might leave with my head high, so why not? Let's go.
I'm not going to do playoff candidates. I'll just do regular players, and you're just going to have to try to guess.
Oh, so it's all the league is possible.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to top players, but I'm not going to give you the full stat lines.
Okay.
I'm only going to give you partial stat lines. So we're going to go with the first one right now. So 26.6 points per game. They're shooting 44.3% from the field. They average 8 rebounds and 4 assists. They play in the Western Conference, and they're on a playoff team.
Is that Kevin Durant?
No.
What was the rebounds?
It is 8 rebounds a game.
LaMarcus Aldridge?
No.
No, he's not been 26. That's got to be...
I'll give you the division in just one moment, and that is going to be the Northwest Division. And like I said, playoff team.
Oh, Karl Anthony Towns. No, he's not a playoff. Damn.
I'll give you another try because he wasn't playoffs.
Oh, sorry.
Is it Joseph Nurkic?
Nope.
Northwest Division.
Corey, I'm disappointed you didn't know this one.
Is that Paul George?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Wow.
I hesitated because of the boards, but I quite didn't
know. Yeah, it's funny, Ashley. I didn't realize he was averaging that many rebounds.
Yeah, me neither until I just looked. I was like, holy shit.
I thought he was like a 20. I knew he was averaging above 26 points per game. That's his career high. But I thought he was only at like 7. I don't know. That's good. Wow.
He's I was like, it. No way he averages that many boards with Westbrook in there. But all right, major props to PG.
All right, next one. Eastern Conference playoff team as well, averaging 23.2 points per game, shooting 49.6% from the field, 6.8 assists, and 4.9 rebounds.
Oh.
What's the field goal percentage?
49.6. I'll give you a hint. Obviously, you could kind of figure this out by the assist total. He's a point guard.
How many points again?
23.2 and 6.8 assists.
Is that?
I'll give you one more hint. It's a really good player. What was that, Corey?
It can't be Kyrie.
Is that your final guess?
Kyrie!
Corey gets it right there.
Yeah, Corey got it right.
All right, 1-1. This is the game breaker right here.
It's gut check time. Come on.
All right, Jorge. Good luck. So, next player plays in the West. Playoff team, 28.1 points per game, 50.9% from the field, 7.4 rebounds, and 6.8 6 assists.
Steph Curry?
No.
Kevin Durant?
Yes.
No! I was so close.
I knew it was a Warrior. The first one. The minute you said Curry, I was like, yeah, definitely Durant.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, Durant is averaging more assists than Curry.
Wow. That is
surprising.
It might be time for me to go hide under my bed until next week's outlet.
I'm not good with stats either, Jorge. Just to make you feel better.
Ashamed.
Oh, it's okay, Jorge. You got to do some homework this weekend.
I do.
All right, guys. That wraps up. As always, a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.